When I got to be chairman of the Seva Foundation, I said to them, do you think it's really acceptable when you're writing the World Health Organization to sign Ram Dass? I mean, you know, what are they going to think? We're kind of a Mickey Mouse organization. But I finally decided that it was all right to be the servant of God fully. I'm really enjoying it. So here we are. It's Ram Dass for better or worse. That's what we needed to begin. Some of you that are aficionados remember being here in Julia Richmond one night, I think the last time I spoke, and I came out to start to speak and I was uptight for one reason or another, who knows. And to cover it, I usually have routines. And I started to cover it. And if you remember, somebody up there, after about 3 minutes, yelled, Ram Dass, my heart hurts. And it cut through my bullshit so fast. It really brought us together and it started the evening off. And it turned into a beautiful evening. Does anybody remember that? Those of you that have been traveling with me for a long time, you may be surprised at my new costume. I'm chairman of the board of the Seva Foundation, and this is as straight as I could get. This is take it off, it's the same schnook it always was. Oh, boy. It's such fun to play all these games. It all seems real for a moment. What I usually do, and I don't assume this will be any different, is share notes of what's been happening. I always talk about myself, it turns out, but those of you that know that it isn't really me, it's us. And I just use myself as a case study that I know better than I know everybody else's case study. Because what awes me is how parallel our journeys are. And how much when I'm going through something and I think, boy, this is really leading edge stuff. I meet somebody and they say, gee, that's just what's been happening to me. Just to put you at ease with an old familiar story about that one, you recall that story about when the 70s, when everybody came and they all wore white and smiled a lot and they were all between 15 and 25? That was who the audience was in those days. And if you remember the story about that in the front row, there was one woman sitting there who was about 70, and she was wearing a hat with little strawberries and cherries on it, artificial. And she was wearing a print dress and black Oxfords, responsible Oxfords, and she had a black patent leather bag. And I thought, she's obviously somebody's relative. Because everybody else was very different than she was. So I started to talk for the group, and in those days we all knew. You know, that was in the 60s and 70s, we all knew. And everybody didn't know, but we knew. And many of us knew because we had shared initiation rites, chemical or otherwise, mostly chemical. So I would tell a story about what happened to me, and everybody would nod, and I'd look over, and she was nodding. And I thought, how does she know? So I told a further out story, like the last time I was stoned on the beach in Mexico and standing by the ocean and I lost my body and the thread broke and I... And she's going like this, you know. And I figure, maybe she's got a neck problem. You know, that's like... And I got absolutely obsessed with what was happening in her consciousness. And so I tell Farah things and look to see what she was doing. And at the end of the lecture, I kind of looked at her and smiled and smiled. And finally she came up to me. And she said, oh, I just want you to know, what you said was just fine. I agreed with everything you said. How did you know? What is it you've done that you can know these things? And she leaned forward very conspiratorially and she said, I crochet. That's when I knew that the game was bigger than I thought it was. And it turns out, if you look at the audience now, it is much more heterogeneous than it was in those days. And we're all gathered. I'm saying the same thing I was saying 20 years ago. And yet, here we all are hearing, and we didn't all come here through any one method. Isn't that far out? Just to think about that. Because in the 60s, we thought there was a method. And here we are in the 80s seeing that it's very overdetermined and a lot of people are sharing shifts in awareness and are interested in consciousness and spirit for a lot of different reasons. Well, for those of you that haven't been to one of these before, I'll give you the quickest thumbnail sketch of what, why. In the 60s, in March 6, 1961, to be exact, Timothy Leary gave me psilocybin, and it changed my life. It changed my life in the sense that it undercut the models I had of who I thought I was. All of the socialization and child development that had left me with a very strong somebody-ness, it cut that out. And of course, there was fear in losing that familiar identity. But there was always also wonder, because I touched a place in myself that was, it was behind all my social roles. And it was a presence. Instead of being good or this or that or achiever or anything, I experienced a place in myself where I just say, I am. Not I am this or I am that, just I am. And there were other qualities of that experience. There was a feeling of familiarity to it. It was a feeling, even though I had not been in that space since probably childhood before I developed my conceptual structures of mind, that place was extremely familiar to me. There was another quality to it, was that I experienced a quality of my heart that was incredibly compassionate. I looked at form as if I was standing behind the forms of the universe, and I looked out at the forms, and it was as if I saw the preciousness of all the forms, the incredible beauty of the stuff of life. It was like God's paintbrush at work. I looked at people and they were so beautiful. I looked at things and they were beautiful. I remember doing a book in the 60s with Sidney Cohen. He was the head of the government drug commission. He was the good guy and I was the bad guy. And we did a book together for New American Libraries called LSD. And we had photographs in it. And when we went to pick the photographs for the book, he picked all the photographs showing all these people on drugs kind of wiped out. And I picked all the ones showing people looking at flowers and roaming in the fields and stuff. And there was only one picture we agreed on. It was a picture of a guy lying on the floor looking at some spilled Coca-Cola. And he liked that because it showed that under drugs, people got so trivial and their minds got so caught in nothing. And I liked it because this person was seeing that in everything there is everything. That in the spilled drop of Coca-Cola is the entire universe. And I saw just the holography of the universe. It's incredible. Well, a few hours later, all I had was the memory. I came down. And that began a journey. That experience imprinted so deeply in my mind because it showed me who I was that I hadn't known I was. And yet it was familiar, and it was my true self. And yet as the drug wore off and my ego structures reimposed themselves like a prison of my mind and came back to my familiar definition of myself, I felt trapped in it, and yet I couldn't push away the prison. I didn't know the mantra or the secret thing to do or what to do, and I came back into my Zumbach suit. And I think it preoccupied me because it felt like it was my true being. And I felt like I was gypped. I was gypping myself not to have access to that. So I did what many others of you did and other people did, was I tried every chemical possibility to try to stabilize that state. I mean, if you took this and then followed it with this and you did it under these conditions with this person reading this book from the Tibetan, this, and you did it after fasting for so many days and standing on your left foot, it would work, see? And I still came down, and I kept coming down and coming down and coming down for about 7 years through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of explorations. And then I went to India, and I met Maharaji, my guru, and I met a being who didn't come down. Now, in the course of that, I learned a lot of interesting things about coming down and getting high. And I think that this is familiar to many of you, but it's just a run-through of simple stuff, which was that what high means is free, and what free means is you don't stand anywhere. And you all remember my routine with the channels on the selector, where when you're on channel one and you look out at the reality of the universe, you see physical bodies, male, female, tall, thin, old, young, dark, light, etc. And then you flip the next flip and you see everybody as personalities, manic, depressive, hysteric, achiever, mother, truck driver, social roles, all that stuff, lawyer, achiever, eager person, responsible, irresponsible, laid back, you know, and you, everybody, most 99.9% of the world treats those two planes as real, as absolutely real. And when you say to somebody, who are you, they answer in terms of, I am a man, or I am a woman, or I am a happy person, or I'm a mother, or they do something in terms of social role or physical body. Social, psychological, physical. Well, then if you shift to channel three, there's only 12 of us. You're either an Aries, a Leo, or a Sagittarius, and that gives you new power, and you suddenly see things you didn't see before, and it's a whole new ball game of reality. And then if you flip one more flip, and the refreshing thing about flipping to that astral plane is you suddenly see that the physical plane and the psychological plane were only relatively real. You thought they were so real, and suddenly by going into the astral plane, you see that they were just more reality, but not the only thing because you're now in a new one. And after years of being only in channel 1 and 2. Look how you suffer if you're only in channel 1 and 2, because the body dies, so you're going to be frightened, because you're going to die. But now go to channel 4, and now you look into the eyes of another person, and you see another being just like you looking back at you. They just package differently. They're packaged in a different body and a different personality and a different astrology, but behind it, there it is, another person just like you. What are you doing in there? How did you get into that one? Because you see a similar being, another what the Christians call soul. You see another soul that has incarnated, taking a different trip, and as a result, because of the personality and the thought forms and the body, they're having a whole, and the parents and the economics, they're having a whole different set of world experiences. They're going through the same school, but they're under a curriculum that is entirely different than the curriculum you're under, because they're going in programmed differently. And when you meet another person behind their stuff, it's quite awesome when they recognize it and you recognize it. Because you at the moment are freed from the dance, and it can happen anyway. You walk into a bank to the bank teller and you look into the eyes of the bank teller. And there, instead of a bank teller looking back at you, is a being who is being a bank teller. That's different. Are you with me? Is it too? And then if you flip the next one, you're looking into yourself, looking into yourself, looking into yourself. There's only one of it. That's the stuff of the universe. That's the tiniest unit of energy that pervades all things. It's the one. It's the Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. There's only one of it. And then if you flip it once more, it disappears. You disappear. The whole thing disappears. There's nothing to see. There's nobody to see it. And that's all. That's also the Shema. That's the void. That keeps the Buddhists happy. Now, you can use any one of those channels. See, you get, as you go up the ladder, each channel you get to gives you more power than you had the one before. Because if you're a soul, you are free of, and you're not identified with your body and your psychological stuff, or even your mythical stuff, your astrology. You're free. You're looking around and you're sort of at play with all that stuff. Relatively free. But you're still busy being a separate somebody, a soul. And the secret of the game, finally, as I understand it at this point in my development, is that there is nowhere to stand. And I used to think for years that getting high meant getting rid of the lower planes and getting to the higher planes. Now I understand you only do that in order to realize that the lower planes are relatively real rather than absolutely real. But to be free, you can't stand in the higher planes any more than you can stand in the lower planes. And that came home to me in a very far out way.